Our last argument of the day, as people are marching up, is A23-1952. ROA Rochester versus City of, if I pronounce this right, Byron. As all parties are aware, the appellant will have 15 minutes for argument in chief. Respondent will have 15 minutes. And finally, the appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. So whenever you're ready, Mr. Bradford, please adjust the microphone and just tell us who you are again. And you may begin, sir.
Thank you, Judge Connolly, and may it please the court. My name is Mark Bradford, representing the appellant, ROA Rochester. This court should reverse the grant of summary judgment for three reasons. First, in paragraph 47, the district court disregarded a clear, bright line rule established by decades of precedent that when a purchaser has notice that a third party may claim an interest in the property, the purchaser must inquire directly of that third party with respect to the nature of its claim. Second, in paragraph 45, the district court made factual findings and inferences directly against the non-moving party, contrary to the summary judgment standard. And then finally, in paragraph 49, the district court granted summary judgment and denied a co-pending motion to compel without considering the merits of that motion to compel. And let me just say one thing on that.
Do we have to get to that last issue, Mr.?
No.
Thank you.
But the one thing I would say about that, Judge Connolly, and I do intend to spend most of my time on the first two issues, is the third point isn't a throwaway. I know that oftentimes litigants will say, give us additional discovery and hold off on summary judgment just to stave off the inevitable. In this case, if you look at the city's response to the motion to compel, it's docket number 64 below at page 7, they say, quote, the city will supplement its discovery responses and disclose all relevant and discoverable information in its possession, including internal communications and communications between the seller and the city. That's 2 weeks before the district court granted summary judgment. So the district court granted summary judgment with the city acknowledging that it hadn't yet disclosed all discoverable information. That is directly what was at issue in the Fuel case, in the Hassan case, and in our view, constitutes reversible error. Any three of the points that I made should raise an eyebrow, but I think collectively they leave us with an order that simply cannot stand. The rule that we've referred to is, I think, first established in Bergstrom, and the court's quote there is, inquiry of the grantor was insufficient. We have the same facts here. Then you go to Teal the following year. It was improper for the purchaser to rely, quote, wholly upon statements made by the grantor. Same facts here. And then in Claflin, of course, this court said the same thing, that the purchaser had a, quote, unquote, duty to inquire of the party claiming rights in the property. That is a clear, easy-to-apply rule, and it simply wasn't followed here. We have on page 3 of this city's summary judgment brief and on page 3 of its response to the motion to compel, the city acknowledges that it was even unclear whether it received copies of the leases before acquiring and closing on the property. That's the point of the rule that we sought to have the district court apply below to clear up any uncertainties with respect to the information provided, excuse me, by the seller and inquire directly of the third party who can state its own interest in the property. With respect to the improper inferences, this is even more stark. I mean, the court inferred on summary judgment based on my client's alleged post-sale conduct that it had some bad motive pre-sale and told the seller not to disclose relevant information to the city. That is sort of the paradigmatic example of improper fact-finding on summary judgment. So for all those reasons, and unless the court has questions for me, I'm prepared to sit down and just ask you to reverse the district court summary judgment order.
Apparently, we do not. Thank you very
Thank
much,
you.
Mr. Bradford. We'll now hear for counsel for the respondent, please.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Melanie Leth, and I represent the respondent, City of Byron. First, we believe that the appellant is misstating the law. The Recording Act in Minnesota does not require that a buyer inquire of a leaseholder about their rights. When they're provided a copy of a lease and given information specifically about that lease, when they've done their due diligence as far as title work goes, they're allowed to rely on what is part of the recorded record with regard to the property.
But according to, I hope I pronounced her name right, Blair Hoft, she didn't get the leases before the closing. Would that be a fair statement?
Well, it would be a fair statement to say she didn't have them in her file. She requested copies of those leases.
Question, did you verify that by asking for a copy of the lease? Not at that time. Now, that doesn't sound like they're in the file somewhere. That sounds like she didn't get them. Why am I wrong?
Well, if you take a look at the rest of the statements made by Ms. Heft during her deposition with regard to
the requests. Did you receive any lease from Mr. Flanagan before moving forward with the sale? No. Are you saying later in the deposition she said yes?
Well, she testified.
Isn't that a fact question?
She testified that she requested a copy of those leases.
Well, the question was not, the question that was asked was, did you receive any lease from Mr. Flanagan before moving forward with the sale? No.
Flanagan testified during his deposition that the leases were attached to an appraisal that he had provided.
Okay, fair enough. Then there's a material fact question dispute between two witnesses in this case. And how on earth can summary judgment be granted, Ms. Leth?
Well, respect.
Did I pronounce that right? Is it Ms. Leth?
It is.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. It's because.
Pause. Take your time.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm grilling you, so I'll try to be more polite.
May I get a drink
take
of water?
Your time. Thank you. Take a moment to collect. I will too.
Your Honor, I would say that the issues with regard to the leases that ended in 2021 are not material facts here, whether she received a copy of that lease or not.
They go to whether, you continue.
Thank you. Nothing within that lease, because it was undisputed that lease existed, but nothing in that lease would have put the city on any further notice to inquire further that Flanagan had signed a new lease, a 10-year lease.
Well, again, that's your problem. I mean, presumably, I assume you're aware of the concept of estoppel certificates, okay. It seems to me all of this could have been solved had prior to closing you went to Mr. Flanagan and the city went to Mr. Flanagan and got an estoppel certificates, because then it's like, then you could sue Flanagan because he's lying. I guess speaking for myself and not my treasured colleagues, it seems to me you were on notice, and at that point, you can't just rely on the seller's affidavit, and Bergstrom seems to be right on point. Why am I wrong?
The Recording Act doesn't require those kinds of estoppel certificates in order to show that the city here was a bona fide purchaser of this property for a value. It was undisputed that Flanagan withheld information about these new leases, and the evidence is undisputed that the appellant was part of that. There was an email prior to closing saying to Flanagan, hey,
well, again,
you signed these addendums.
And you know what? if this goes to trial, you can crucify them on cross, but that's at trial, not at summary judgment. I am astonished that summary judgment was granted in this case. I absolutely am. There are material facts in dispute. The district court was, as was pointed out, was not applying the proper inference. And then finally, on its own, sua sponte brought up this, I'm drawing a blank.
Unclean hands.
Yes, I get it. You know, you had a seller's affidavit, and that's a very important document. But for the reasons articulated in Bergstrom, you don't get to use that as a shield if there's notice. If there's some implied notice that, you know, what do these leases say? And I mean, I think that's just due diligence. That you got to kind of look at the leases. And according to the testimony, you didn't even get the leases prior to the closing. I mean, isn't that a problem?
Well, the city wasn't going to be receiving any rent pursuant to the 2021 lease. All of the proceeds were going to the seller. And it was always represented to the city that those billboard leases would end 2021. So frankly, the city didn't care what was in them because as long as they ended in 2021, it didn't matter. But that doesn't mean that the appellant can do this bait and switch and substitute 10-year leases of which the city had no implied knowledge. There were no facts that changed about how the appellant was using the property that would put the city on further notice to inquire. Flanagan intentionally withheld this information at the prompting of the appellant. Hey, make this our problem. Put the onus on us. You can be out of this entirely, was the email that the appellant sent to Flanagan, which induced Flanagan not to disclose those 10-year leases. And it's not that there are facts in dispute here.
Then the city should sue Flanagan and nail him. But I don't think on this record that summary judgment was appropriately granted.
Ms. Leth, if I may.
Yes.
It seems to me a central question is Bergstrom control here? Right, because it was decided after the Recording Act, which you're relying on, became effective. So tell me why it shouldn't, because I've been spending, being a paper person, got it here, been looking at it, and think, wow, this seems pretty direct. So how would you distinguish it?
In Bergstrom, in that case, the buyer never even requested copies of the lease, or the permit, rather, at all. And that is how this case is distinguishable. The court held that the city's request for that 2021 lease, whether or not she saw it, whether or not she kept it in her file, whether or not she could recall any of that, she requested a copy. And in Bergstrom, the buyer did not. And in that case, it was also a one-year lease and therefore not required to be recorded. That's another distinguishing element here. This is a 10-year lease that the appellants waited nearly a year and then never recorded the actual leases, recorded memorandums of the leases.
What about the difference between Flanagan's affidavit and his verbal statements? Does that point to an inconsistency, which also should have triggered, you know, more scrutiny by the city?
Well, it's certainly an inconsistency, but he had already been discussing those leases with the city, had already believed he'd disclosed copies of those leases to the city. It's hard to know what he was thinking when he signed that document at closing, but it's certainly not a shock that a seller would just sign an affidavit at closing.
We've all been in closing sometimes.
Yeah.
Well, and right. But when you sign them and it's an affidavit, you're stuck. And yeah, I mean, I think Flanagan is in huge trouble, but.
Certainly in the city's counterclaim, in their answer and counterclaim, they outlined the situation that Flanagan failed to disclose these leases. The appellant certainly could have brought Flanagan into that lawsuit as well, and they chose not to. Into this lawsuit as well, and they chose not to.
Seems like a smart decision to me. So basically, I think your biggest point is you know, you are a bona fide purchaser for value. You didn't have the leases. You relied on the seller's affidavit, and that Bergstrom is distinguishable.
Yes, I would say that the facts that the court relied on, they weren't disputed. The conduct that was alleged here was all alleged in the city's initial summary judgment motion, and in the appellant in this case didn't dispute them. So it's not that there are disputed facts. Those facts were not disputed. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Bradford, you'll have the last words.
Your Honor, unless the court has any questions for me, I'm prepared to waive rebuttal.
No, I don't believe we do.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much. The matter is submitted. We will issue our decision in 90 days. That being our last oral argument of the day, we are adjourned.
All rise.